Chapter 16. "This is not good," Samantha Reed stated. Using their Z-phones in infrared mode, they had determined at least 5 bipedal beings were higher up the hill above them to the west. The glimpse in infrared had been brief as the beings, likely Theranin, had been crossing a mountain meadow. As soon as the beings went back into the dense forest, they had been lost to view. What Sammy and her companions knew for certain was there were at least 5, and the beings were moving downhill toward the 3 humans. That was bad enough. What made it worse was some asshole on the eastern shore of the lake continuing to take pot shots at the humans. Someone over there was shooting at them with a heavy-caliber weapon. The humans each took cover behind a tree, but that was only temporary safety, and trees were sparse on the lower slopes of the hills west of the lake. Huddling behind the west side of a tree exposed them to the beings coming down the hill from the west. They needed to find some place to conceal themselves and wait for the approaching dropships that were carrying Spec Ops teams. Lieutenant Colonel Chang had ordered the 3 downed pilots to take cover rather than running, as they might blunder right into the enemy. Until the dropships could arrive and hopefully deploy drones to give the Spec Ops teams a tactical read on the enemy locations, it was best for Reed and the others to stay put. Except for that asshole shooting at them. "Ah!" she twitched, startled. "You all right, Reed?" Captain Zhao asked from a tree 10 meters to the south.
"Yes, sir."
She slapped her neck and came away with a wriggling multi-legged insect.
"This thing bit me."
Her hand already had a droplet of her own blood on it, and there was more as she squashed the offending native insect against a tree root. The forest floor was covered with decaying leaf litter from the sturdy trees above, and the 3 humans were dismayed to find all manner of insects and worms found the rotting leaves to be an inviting place to inhabit. Almost as bad was the sharp spikes of seed casings. The dropped casings had split open, but the spikes were still sharp. If the downed pilots had need to sneak around quietly in the forest, that would be a problem, as the dominant type of tree had nearly circular leaves of a tough, waxy material, kind of like a mountain laurel bush on Earth, Sammy thought. It apparently had not rained in the area recently, as the fallen leaves were dry and cracked loudly when stepped on. That was the only good thing about being targeted by a sniper. The enemy was far enough away across the lake that making noise by moving around was unlikely to attract a shot in their direction.
"These things," she held up the squashed yellow-green insect that had bit her, "aren't poisonous, are they?"
Her neck now itched. She couldn't tell whether the sting was getting worse or whether the feeling was paranoia.
"Skippy says the biology here is incompatible with human biochemistry," Captain Zhao assured her. "We can't eat them, and they can't eat us."
"Tell that to this stupid bug," Sammy muttered, and flicked away another bug that had been crawling up the right forearm of her flight suit.
"Skippy did not say the life here can't eat us," Singh pointed out. "He said animals here can't digest us. They won't know that until we're already in their bellies."
"Yeah," Sammy rubbed her neck. The bite area was itching worse. That could be a biotoxin. It could also be a simple allergic reaction to foreign, alien proteins in the saliva of the insect that bit her. The skin there could also be irritated simply from her scratching it. She forced herself to leave it alone, holding her hands out in front of her where she could watch to make sure they weren't sneaking back to rub at her neck.
"But Skippy says a lot of things, and they aren't always the gospel truth, are they? He thought it would be just fine to go poking around in that dead AI canister, and he told us there was no intelligent life down here, didn't he? The elders are long gone, and he never considered there might be other survivors who made it down here. When we lost the ship and had to come to Gingerbread just to survive, I thought we would be in danger from whatever machines the elders left behind. I never thought we would get shot at by little green Theranin ass—
Whoa!" Reed startled as a round glanced off the tree she was huddled behind, rocketed past her, and dug into the dirt. She ducked as the buried round exploded, throwing up a fountain of dirt and rocks. Then she scrambled back behind the tree to remain out of view. Keeping her head down and shielding her skull with one hand from small shattered bits of rock raining down, she crawled on her belly across the forest floor to hide behind another tree. Whoever was shooting at them had decent imaging equipment. Sammy feared the enemy knew which tree was now protecting her. That last round had exploded. The human pilots had been keeping count.
one out of three rounds was a dud. At first, when some rounds exploded and some didn't, Sammy had wondered if every third round was a sort of tracer, but that didn't make sense. With advanced technology, aliens almost certainly didn't need tracers, and every sniper Sammy had ever met was arrogant enough to disdain wasting a shot simply to enhance targeting. Each shot by a sniper was supposed to be a kill. The answer had to be the Theranan equipment was old and unreliable. If Skippy was right, the Theranan probably had not been able to use their high-tech gear, even if it was ancient. Only now that Skippy had ordered the Guardians to stand down were the Theranan able to use weapons they must have kept in storage for a very long time, which meant the sniper could not have been able to practice shooting live rounds. That might be the only reason Sammy and her companions were still alive.
"Reed, are you all right?" Captain Zhao asked.
"Yes, sir, squared away. You? How's your shoulder?"
"Fine, Lieutenant. We can't stay here."
"Agreed. They seem to know where we are when we move."
"I don't want to go up the hill," Zhao mused. "We might run into those other Theranan, but we can't stay here."
"We could if someone wasn't shooting at us from across the lake," Singh complained. "On Earth, even a skilled sniper with a specialized rifle would have trouble making that shot. These damned aliens have technology that makes them super—"
They all ducked as another round hit the tree to the left of Sammy, breaking the tree off 6 feet from the ground and sending splinters in every direction. Because Sammy's tree was slightly up the slope, it protected her from the worst of the flying wood shards, though she took impacts on the back of her right hand.
"Ah, I'm okay, sir," she assured Zhao. "If the Theranan think they hit me behind that other tree, I'm staying right here."
"Good thinking, Reed," Zhao agreed.
"We can't stay here much longer," Singh warned.
"I am concerned that sniper is attempting to flush us out from cover and straight at the Theranan coming down the hill at us," Zhao explained.
"Sir," Reed interjected, "there's a gap in this tree. I can see the eastern shore through it."
The tree formed a shallow Y shape near the ground, leaving a narrow gap.
"Yes, so?"
"So, sir, they might think I'm dead. I can use my Z-Phone's imager to pinpoint the location of that sniper next time they fire."
Zhao considered that. "If you can't identify where they are—"
"Yes, sir,"
Sammy finished her leader's thought.
"The aliens out here have superior technology and genetic enhancements. They have every advantage over us. But there is one thing I know about modern combat that is true for everyone. If you can see it, you can kill it."
"Call it in," Zhao ordered.
4 minutes later, after two more rounds impacted and one of them caused a rock to thud painfully against Singh's ribs, Sammy knew almost exactly where the sniper was located. Interestingly, the sniper had not moved between shots. That demonstrated arrogance and tactical stupidity in Sammy's opinion.
"Viper lead," she called over her Z-phone. "This is Fireball, do you copy?"
Viper lead, the commander of the incoming dropships, responded immediately.
"Viper lead here. What is your status, Fireball?"
"We are pinned down by sniper fire. We know the sniper's position. Transmitting location over TAC link to you now."
"You have him located?" Viper lead asked, impressed.
"Yes, sir,"
Sammy replied with a wink to Zhao.
"Would you mind delivering a message to the sniper from us?"
Viper Lead's voice reflected amusement.
"I think we can do better than that. We'll be in range within 20 seconds.
30 seconds later, providing a 10-second safety margin, a door opened behind a Falcon dropship and a single missile was ejected. The door snapped closed immediately, as an open door compromised the Falcon's stealth and aerodynamics. The missile fell straight down to clear the formation of dropships and fell farther to reduce its signature before igniting its main engine. A jet of flame erupted from the missile's tail and it surged forward, exceeding the speed of sound in the blink of an eye. Hugging the terrain, the missile raced south, then west, as it crested the ridge of the hills east of the lake. Diving to follow the slope, the missile turned north, rocketing in on its target. It dove straight at the ground and detonated its warhead in a cone-shaped explosion, hammering a 100-meter circle of ground with devastating force. Microseconds later, the body of the missile impacted the ground, dug in, and its remaining fuel exploded, digging a crater 3 meters deep. Across the lake, All three humans observed the missile strike, seeing a jet of dirt shooting skyward above the tree canopy, then falling back down to create a cloud of soil, soot, and mist.
"Hoo yeah!" Sammy exulted without taking her attention off the target area. "Viper lead, thank you. The target is toast."
"We ran out of fruit baskets, Fireball. Glad to hear the target enjoyed the message anyway. We are headed for the LZ now."
"I do not think there will be any survivors in the target area," Captain Zhao said with satisfaction.
"Let's move now, while that dust cloud obscures their view of us. If that sniper did survive, whoever they are will be keeping their head down for a while. Sing, can you move?"
"Yes, sir."
Sing stood up stiffly, clutching her bruised ribs. It hurt like hell to breathe.
"I may have cracked ribs."
"I'll help her, sir," Reed offered, dashing lightly across the debris-littered forest floor to assist her fellow pilot.
"Which direction?"
Zhao pointed to the left.
"The dropship's LZs are to the north, so Major Smythe will be bringing his people in from there. Let's save them part of the trip, eh?"
Sammy grinned.
"Good idea."
At home base, Margaret Adams glared at Skippy's inert beer can.
"What are you going to do? What can we do?"
"Nothing, I'm afraid," Skippy replied miserably. "Joe can't get himself out of that cockpit, and we have no way to go down there to get him out. I wish we did."
"He has not fallen to the center of a star, Skippy. He's in a freaking lake," she insisted with hands on her hips.
"You mean to tell me with all this fancy alien technology, we can't extract the colonel from a puddle of water?"
"As Joe would tell you, it is not a mere puddle. It is a glacial lake, very deep. It—"
Adams made a cutting motion.
"That sounds like an excuse, Skippy."
Okay. I know the United States Marine Corps does not allow excuses. However, as I am not a Marine, then realistically I must tell you, you're not a Marine, but you are a pirate. We don't accept excuses in the merry band of pirates either."
Skippy had no idea when to shut up and stop pushing his luck.
"Technically, I am not part of the crew. You all work for—"
"You are part of the crew, Skippy. You insisted on being listed in the crew roster, remember?"
"Oh, that was a joke, Sergeant. No one really thinks my rank is asshole first class, so no joke, Skippy.
That doesn't matter anyway."
"You giving up?"
"I do not see a realistic alternative." "Bullshit. Bullshit. None of us gives up. Not on anything. Never."
Skippy sighed.
"Margaret, this is not a movie where the tough sergeant gives a stirring speech that inspires the troops to victory. I have already considered all possibilities to rescue Joe, and it is impossible. I will not waste my time."
Adams snatched Skippy off the table and held him right up in front of her face.
"Listen to me, you useless tin can."
"Sergeant, that is uncalled—"
"It is totally called for, you worthless piece of shit. Your idiotic sorry excuse for judgment got us into this mess. I also rescued your worthless mudball of a planet,"
Skippy shot back hotly.
"You? You make it sound like you did that all by yourself, and that is grade A bullshit. Without Colonel Bishop giving you useful ideas to work with, you are a shiny goddamn toaster. The two of you together are a great team. Separately, Joe is a decent sergeant, and you are a fancy laptop."
That hurt, Margaret.
"The truth often does, Skippy.
You have been an insufferably arrogant asshole since the beginning, telling us how incredibly smart you are.
Great. Fine. I don't care if you insult me. They're just words. Now put your enormous brain to work and think up a way to get Joe out of there, because if we don't have Joe—"
she glared at him—
"then we don't need you anymore."
I am waiting." "Okay, maybe I could examine the problem again. It's not like I have anything else to do. Could you please put me back on the table?"
Adams slammed Skippy on the table hard enough that he wobbled.
"Joe doesn't have much time. I expect a solution in 5 minutes."
"5 minutes? Come on, that is, you keep telling us that 5 minutes in meat sack time is an eternity in Skippy time. Were you lying about that?"
"No. Working on it."
"This is acceptable," Major Smythe declared with soft understatement. Then even his typical British reserve could not stop him from breaking into a broad grin.
"This is brilliant!"
The merry band of pirates could not fly over enemy positions with dropships, but they had been able to deploy a half-dozen stealth recon drones after the dropships landed. The devices, no larger than a hummingbird, weighed almost nothing, and therefore did not require much thrust to keep them aloft, which was the secret to their successful use. A heavier drone, like armed hunter-killers, had to rely on miniature turbines or flapping wings to counteract the force of gravity, and that disturbance of the air gave away their position. Even under stealth, which bent photons around them, drones could be detected by the artificial downdraft of air beneath them. A downdraft in ionized air coming from an otherwise invisible device was a clear giveaway of a stealth drone's presence. Drone designers attempted to make their drones less noticeable by disguising them as birds or whatever native life flew in that planet's atmosphere. In rare cases, such disguises fooled enemy senses briefly. Mostly, semi-intelligent sensor systems could easily tell the difference between a real bird and a maser-carrying drone. Often, the deployment of drones gave a military force only a quick glimpse into enemy territory before the enemy's counter-drones attacked and destroyed the intruders. Thus, Major Smythe was enormously pleased, nearly tickled pink with delight, that his force could rely on 6 stealth recon drones to provide persistent data above their position and over enemy territory. At first, assuming the useful life of his drones would be short, Smythe ordered the drone operators to fly them high and fast to collect as much data as they could before being shot down. To everyone's surprise, all 6 drones completed their missions undisturbed. Knowing he was pushing his luck, he instructed 2 of the drone operators to send their devices west of the lake, one to circle the 3 downed pilots, the other flew higher up the hillside to determine exactly how many Theranin were there and what they were doing. The other 4 drones were detached to cover Captain Chandra's team on the east side of the lake and to scout how extensive the Theranin settlement was in that area. Through the visor of his helmet, Smythe and any one of the merry band of pirates on the ground near the lake or orbiting the area in a dropship or even back at base camp had a god's eye view from any or all of the 6 drones. Smythe could rapidly toggle from a visual feed from a single drone to a composite image of the entire area with enemy positions highlighted by red icons.
"This is brilliant," Smythe muttered to himself.
"Captain Zhou," Smythe called to the Chinese team commander who had been sent to the west side of the lake to link up with and recover the 3 downed pilots. Smythe could see Zhou had split his team, with 3 proceeding toward the enemy and 2 headed straight toward the 3 pilots.
"Do not, repeat, do not engage the enemy. Break off before contact."
"Sir," Zhou replied, understandably frustrated, but Smythe could see Zhou and the 2 people with him had halted.
"We can intercept—" "I have high confidence you can, Captain," Smythe said calmly.
Zhou and his team had 3 of the Kristang armored suits and represented the most powerful ground combat team available to Smythe. On the west side of the lake, Captain Chandra had 5 armored suits, plus a combat, with 2 other combats back at base camp to deal with the unexpected.
"The enemy's capabilities are as yet unknown, and we do not need to engage to accomplish the mission," he reminded his subordinate.
Zhou was not the only commander on the scene eager to make contact and see what the enemy was capable of. From drone surveillance, Smythe knew the Theranin on the west side of the lake were not accompanied by combats, and in theory represented a manageable threat. Smythe also knew from experience that you truly only knew what an enemy was capable of when the shooting started. Skippy had told Smythe not to expect any threats on the surface of Gingerbread, yet the Theranin had fired anti-aircraft missiles and used rifles. What other threats was Smythe faced with?
"Extract the pilots, cover the egress, and if we decide to engage, it will be at a time and place of our choosing and on our terms. And if we hit them, we won't have to worry about unprotected pilots getting in the line of fire."
"Yes, sir," Zhou replied, and Smythe was satisfied to hear the grim determination in the man's voice.
"Hey, Joey," Skippy said cheerfully.
"Hey, Skippy," I answered weakly.
"What's up?" I asked after a coughing fit.
"I have a monkey-brained idea to rescue you."
"I thought you said it was impossible."
"Sergeant Adams, persuaded me to consider the problem from a fresh perspective."
"Uh-huh. Was this fresh perspective provided by her boot up your ass?"
That damned woman can be very persuasive, he grumbled.
So what is your idea?
It is a genius plan to rescue your worthless hide.
Skippy, I told you, I do not want Chang putting anyone at risk to get me out of here. A dropship hovering over the water would be a big fat target. Even if a dropship came in and dropped off a person in powered armor, it would be exposed to missiles too long.
I agree, Joe. Also, I considered the possibility of someone diving down to you in a Kristang armored suit, and that is a no-go. Those suits were not designed to work underwater. Their maximum effective depth is about 50 meters above your position. The Kristang use specialized suits for underwater and high-pressure atmosphere conditions. We are not equipped with that type of gear.
Ah, crap, I said. There went the idea I'd been keeping in my back pocket, if Smythe's team could take out the Theranin and eliminate the threat to our dropships. No powered suits swimming down to rescue me, then?
Nope. And no dropships hovering over the lake and lowering a cable to pull your dragon out of the water. That idea was never going to work, Joe. With the dragon full of water, it would take three falcons working together to lift you off the bottom.
Damn. What is your monkey-brained idea, then?
You know how I said the cockpit door might open if you were not so deep, if you were in less than 100 meters of water?
Uh-huh. Are you going to use the magical power of wishful thinking to lift me 30 meters?
No. Are you familiar with the expression, if Muhammad cannot come to the mountain must come to Muhammad?
Yeah, sort of. Why does that matter?
Because in this case, if Joe cannot rise 30 meters, then the water level must drop 30 meters.
Oh, shit. My already chilled body felt a shudder run up my spine. What the hell are you gonna do, Skippy?
Joe, sit back, relax, and behold the awesomeness. Although strapping in and beholding would be better. This could get kind of rough. There were multiple landing zones scattered north of the lake in case one landing zone was defended by enemy anti-aircraft systems, and they were all behind a hill north of the lake. The dropships had come in low all at once to saturate enemy air defenses, touch down only long enough to discharge the Spec Ops troops and their equipment, and dusted off to the north along egress routes that Skippy had mapped to conceal them from Theranin on the hilltops along the east shore of the lake. When two of the Falcons were 20 kilometers from the lake, they each fired two missiles. Dropping off the internal rails, the four missiles did not ignite their rockets and streak away at high speed. Instead, they extended their long, thin wings and engaged their small air-breathing turbine motors, circling back toward the lake. Their mission did not require high speed. Indeed, speed would be the enemy of success on this particular assignment. To prevent enemy gunners from seeing one missile and sighting in on the following birds, the four missiles were not strung out in a line. They flew side by side. Even with only turbines powering their flight, they were moving at 600 kilometers per hour when they crossed the northern shore of the lake and turned east-southeast, ducking down to skim the wave tops. In unison, they cut their turbines, closed their air intake doors, and coasted until they were moving less than 200 kilometers per hour. Then they pulled their noses up sharply and explosive bolts shed their wings. Guided only by the small tail fins, the four missiles reached the top of their unpowered arcs, slowing further until they almost stalled in midair. The last of their velocity was used to push the noses down, and the missiles fell to plunge into the water, leaving only small splashes as they impacted in a cluster less than 50 meters in diameter. Then they were gone, shortly after some of the Theranin on the east shore had taken notice of them. The four missiles descended rapidly, gathering speed as they sank into the icy depths of the lake. Even underwater, they communicated with each other, using tail fins to slow if one fell too far ahead of the others. It was important that they all reached their single target at the same time. Otherwise, the explosion of the first would knock the others off course and dissipate their own explosive energy. Because the noses of the Theranin air-to-air missiles were packed with high-density explosives, they were heavy, and there was nothing inside the missile casings to provide buoyancy. Their mass and sleek shapes allowed them to descend rapidly, even as the water pressure steadily increased, acting as a counter to the pull of gravity. All four missiles reached their target within 0.02 seconds of each other, and the four coordinated their actions, so the detonation of their four shaped charge warheads happened within a nanosecond. While a large part of Skippy had been trying to figure out a way to rescue Joe, and that large part grew increasingly frustrated to the point of going into useless cycles of self-loathing and self-pity, because he knew Sergeant Adams was correct about him and his limited usefulness to the team, another part of Skippy was devoted to assessing the tactical situation for Lieutenant Colonel Chang and feeding data to Major Smythe. A tiny submind of Skippy went off on its own, crunching less important sensor data that had been gathered by the Dragon before it was shot down. This little submind, which contained a million times more processing power than all the computers on Earth combined, was content to crunch data while Skippy's main consciousness wrestled with important problems. The submind was aware of Joe Bishop's dilemma, and of Skippy's so far completely useless efforts to find a way to rescue the captain of the Flying Dutchman from a watery grave. Being on Team Skippy meant each submind performed their assigned duties quietly and efficiently, and if the subminds had doubts or disparaging thoughts about their fearless and usually overconfident leader, they wisely kept that to themselves. Perhaps a few especially bold subminds exchanged private communications on the overall subject of Skippy, and perhaps a very few of them composed humorous poems and songs about Skippy the not-so-magnificent, and had a good laugh while hoping the absent-minded Skippy was not paying attention. The submind assigned to the lowly duty of compiling and analyzing geological data collected by Joe's Dragon did the best it could to make sense of the incomplete information. It had a chuckle at a particularly funny song mocking Skippy, while it finished creating a detailed view of Gingerbread's subsurface structure, and because it had nothing else to do, it started looking at the lake in which Joe Bishop was trapped. And it found a curious fact. The amount of water flowing into the lake from the main river from the north, and various streams coming down the hills to the east and west, was a known data element. The amount of water flowing into the lake from underground springs could be estimated with a high degree of accuracy. The submind also had solid data on the volume of water flowing out of the lake to the south. Based on the temperature, humidity, sunlight, and chemical composition of the lake water, the submind knew how much water was lost to evaporation over the lake surface. And the numbers didn't add up, even when the math was double and triple checked. The lake level should be higher, but it wasn't, which meant the lake must be losing water to a previously unknown outlet, and that needed to be investigated. When the submind completed its investigation, it became extremely excited and immediately attempted to get the attention of Skippy. It was ignored. When the submind repeatedly tried to notify Skippy, it received increasingly annoyed replies that Skippy could not pay attention at the moment because Skippy the Magnificent was busy working on important things, and whatever the lowly submind wanted, it could not possibly appreciate the vast scope of the crisis Skippy was dealing with. So shut the hell up, please. The argument dragged on for 7 agonizingly long nanoseconds, until the submind had enough and shouted the elder AI equivalent of, "Hey, dumbass." That got Skippy's attention. And a microsecond later, after Skippy absorbed all the pertinent data and performed his own analysis, Skippy had a plan to rescue Joe. The warheads of the 4 missiles directed their explosive energy at a shelf of rock 220 meters below the lake surface. The rock was composed of a shale that was softer and more brittle than the surrounding granite, and had been steadily eroding away over thousands of years since the lake had been formed by a retreating glacier. The shale had become porous, with numerous cracks which allowed a measurable amount of water to seep out of the lake into underground caverns. That leaking water, originally a drip, 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 had become a steady flow within the last 3,000 years. Eventually, the shelf of shale would crumble completely, allowing a substantial part of the lake to drain away. Eventually was not fast enough for Skippy, the not known to be particularly patient. He accelerated the erosion process using the energy of 4 powerful warheads, with their shape charges focused on what scans showed was the weakest point of the shale layer. The warheads had the advantage of pushing against water already under high pressure, allowing very little of their energy to be wasted in other directions. The shale shattered under the hammer blow. On the western shore, Lieutenant Reed and the others huddled under an overhanging tree root, taking shelter from the Theranin who were advancing down the slope above. The root was thicker around than her waist, curving out 2 meters from the base of the towering tree. At one point, The root had grown to encircle a boulder, but that rock had been dislodged and rolled down the hill to rest against another tree below. With the boulder gone, and twigs and leaf debris almost filling in the gap above, the root provided good cover, with escape routes on three sides. Major Smythe had called to assure the crash survivors that Captain Zhou and Spec Ops' team were coming in hot to rescue the three pilots. Whether the merry band of pirates would arrive before the Theranin was still a good question. Between the three pilots, the most powerful weapons they had were knives in the ankle holsters of their boots. Those short blades were intended to cut away stubborn straps and anything that could get snagged in the cramped cockpit of a dropship, not to fight attacking aliens who possessed advanced technology. She and her two companions had not been looking at the lake, so they missed seeing the four missiles plunge into the water. When she turned her attention back to the lake to scan the eastern shore for threats, the ripples where the missiles had splashed into the water had already been swallowed up by the wind-driven waves, so the three humans laying flat on the forest floor were startled when they felt a faint shock through the ground beneath them.
"Was that a missile?"
Reed asked, and the three visually scanned in all directions. None of them saw a smoke plume that was characteristic of a warhead exploding. Then she saw a circle appear on the surface of the lake toward the eastern shore, white foam racing outward from an area that began about 50 meters in diameter. The circle was a slightly raised dome of water that was at first smoother than the surrounding water. When the eastern rim of the circle hit the far shore, water surged up a meter in a splash, then fell backward, bringing forest debris with it. Already the circle was becoming indistinct as waves disturbed the formerly smooth surface.
"What the hell is that?" Reed asked.
"I'm calling this in," she announced, although surely the Spec Ops team could also see the lake surface.
"Wait," Captain Zhao whispered as he grabbed her forearm. "Lieutenant, look at the far shoreline. Is the lake level dropping?"
he asked skeptically. Reed used her Z-phone's imaging magnifier feature as a telescope. Zooming in on the far shore, at first all she could see was roiling water where the surge of water had pushed up onto the shore and into the first rank of trees lining the lake. Then she turned her attention farther south along the shore where the outer rim of the splash had not yet reached. Rocks in the water there had a sharply defined color line, dark at the water level and light gray, almost white above. The separation line was now clearly above the water.
"I don't remember seeing those rocks exposed when we got out of the water," Sammy stated.
"That sandbar wasn't there either."
Zhao pointed to a new peninsula extending out from the eastern shore. It was grainy sand and pebbles, and as they watched, the sandbar grew as the lake level dropped.
"That can't be a wind shift," she observed. "This lake isn't large enough for wind to pile up water on one side."
"And the wind is blowing toward the east," Sammy agreed.
"Hey, look!" She pointed excitedly toward where the circle had first appeared. Now the lake surface was disturbed by what appeared to be a whirlpool that was gathering speed and strength.
"What in the world could be going on out there?"